So it was requested that we continue our parsha a little bit. So let's touch on a few more concepts in our parsha. The idea of Yovel corresponds to Shavuos, the 50th year, the 50th day. The Torah commands us, and we had said we would expand on this, don't afflict your fellow man. And the Torah says it twice. And we discussed at the end of last class the idea of not being, don't be unfair to someone in terms of their store, in terms of their time, in terms of giving them indication that you want to buy something when you know full well you're not going to. I try to be meticulous about this, and I found that people respect it. I don't remember ever losing by it. I've walked into stores and said, I do not intend to buy a thing today. I want to look at what you have, but I'm telling you right now, I do not intend to buy anything today. Sometimes it's a bookstore. Sometimes I tell them, I'm going to compare prices. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy here. I'm going to go home, compare prices, and decide. But I try to be very fair, because that's what the halacha says. Don't take someone's time if you know you're not going to buy there. So sometimes I remember when my wife and I were going to get engaged. So I went into a store, and I said to him, I have X amount that I want to spend on a piece of jewelry, and not more than that. So the guy shows me a bunch of stuff, and then I said, okay, this isn't for me. So he said, I'll show you something else. And he takes out a whole other box. And I said, no, I don't see anything here that's right. And then he says, I'll show you something else. Takes out a third box. And then I saw one piece I liked. I said, okay, how much is that? He quotes me a price that's three times the amount I told him. I said, I told you I can't spend that kind of money. So he says, I'll make you a good deal. I'll give you 20% discount. I said, that's very nice. I told you I can't spend that kind of money. You know, you drive a hard bargain, and he tells me, I'll give you a 30% discount. I said, I didn't come to haggle with you. I told you I can't afford that. That I can't buy. He says to me, you know, you're not being fair. I said, why am I not being fair? I told you my price range. I can't. He said, fine, you boy, are you tough. 35% off. I said, I'm not haggling. I got it almost at the price I said initially. He went down like phenomenal amounts. It blew my mind that how much he was trying to make off of me. You see, and then he sold it to me for very close to the amount I said. Okay, but I didn't come to afflict him. I told him off the bat. I had an identical story with sandals. I walked into a store and I told the guy how much I could pay. And he gave me double the price and he ended up giving it to me for the price I said initially. A table also, right?
Is he afflicting you?
That's a good question. So I'll tell you an interesting story. The Talmud says that a fair price, you're making 1/6 profit. So I was once renting an apartment, and I called the landlord. We were then dealing, one of the kids had breathing difficulties, so life was a little bit challenging, running to the hospital and back and forth. I called the landlord 2 months before the rent is up, and I said to him, prices have shifted in the neighborhood. I want to know if our rent is staying the same. He says, yeah. I call him up again 2-3 weeks later. I say, let's close a contract. If you're prepared to leave the price at the same price, I want to close a contract for another year. He tells me, I'll get to it. And this kept going on until we were holding 2 weeks before the contract was up. And then he calls me up. He says, I need 2 more days. I said, what's the deal? He said, I want to check out prices. I said, we spoke. And he said, you're not raising rent this year. And he said, yeah, I still want to check out prices. I said, I told you 2 months ago the prices went up. And you said, you're not raising the rent. He said, we'll talk in 2 days. He calls back 2 days later. And he raised the rent by between 30 and 40%.
Sure.
Boom. Yeah. And I was in a position where I couldn't do anything. There was nothing I could do. You know, you have a medical need at that time. You can't pack up and move. So I said to him, you know, what you're doing isn't legitimate. We agreed on something. He said to me, the Gemara says, Eino na'a bekarka. The Gemara says, there's no such... No, he said to me, I'm sorry. He said, the Gemara says a fair price is within 1/6 of the right price. And over here, I can get 30% more. I said to him, ask your local Orthodox rabbi if what you're doing is right. He said, why not? I'm telling you, the Gemara said. I said, you're right, the Gemara says that. But the Gemara says another rule. The Gemara says, "Eino na bekarka." When it comes to land, there's no one price. Go around this neighborhood, take the same apartment, the same size, and you'll see there's a range, and the range is more than 1/6. You'll see some people are paying for the same apartment 2,500 shekel, and other people are paying close to 4,000 shekel. The range is huge. The Gemara says, when it comes to land, eino na bekarka. Aside from which, you already committed to a price, and more reasons. So you're right. When do we say that the sixth is the range that's fair? That's when you come to Israel and there's a set price for a bag of milk, okay? So let's say the set price, how much is a bag of milk today? $4.90, $5.30, something like that. I don't know, because by me there's a sale in our makor. It's like $4.90, but I think that's a sale price. I think the regular price is $5.30. So you come to the store, you're new to town, and you ask them how much is the bag of milk, and they say $5.30. So you take $5.30, or €5.30, and you pay him. Now that's three times the price. So you pay him, and he doesn't tell you anything, and you go home. And after about a week of doing this, your neighbor says, "Why are you paying him in euros?" And you go, "Oh, the price isn't in euros? I thought he was giving me the fair price. I thought he has a lot of people from Chutzart said his prices aren't euros, like in the airport." Taxis have done this, where people have boarded the taxi and they told them the fare in dollars. The Nesher, you know, there are set prices from the airport to certain cities, right? So a person looks at the price and they tell them that's in dollars. Okay, you just ripped the guy off by 300%. So that's Loto Noishet Amito. That's where the seller is afflicting the buyer because there's a set price. There are things that there's no set price for. Look at real estate. You have people who charge an arm and a leg and they get the price. Are they afflicting? Go check the prices. You'll see the prices. You know the prices. So the idea of lo tonu means don't be unfair. Don't afflict them by being unfair towards him. We're moving forward. The Torah repeats and says, "Lo tonu, don't afflict your fellow man." And from here we learn you're not allowed to say a word that will hurt someone. And we have phenomenal stories in the Gemara about this, right? You guys know the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, right? Yes?
Which one?
Okay, the first rabbi to appear in Shas is Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was 26 years old. He hadn't yet learned Torah. And then he ran away from home. His father was a wealthy baron named Hyrcanus. He ran away from home to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he learned by him, and he became a big, big Talmud Chacham. And then he became so big that when he would teach Torah, they said his teachings are like Moshe Rabbeinu talking at Sinai. He was huge. And then one time someone came and asked him a question. If I take an earthenware oven, I break it in half, so the bigger half is still usable. So the bigger half still retains its title as an oven, and it could be tamei. But if I take that bigger half and I break it again, so now I have the smaller half, and then the bigger half is broken into two more pieces, so now I don't have an oven anymore, right? So it's no longer usable, it's no longer tamei, it's no longer defiled, right? If a dead rat fell inside or something, right? What happens if I put sand in between, so I have row number one, and then sand, and then layer number two, and then more sand, and then layer number three, and then I put tar all around it, and I create a new oven. Does it go back to its status of being the old oven, because I reattached it? Or do I say, I didn't reattach it, I put sand in between the layers, and now it's a new oven, so it's no longer defiled. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus said it's pure. It doesn't go back to its old status, it's a kosher oven, it's fine, it's tahor. They went and asked the rabbis, they said, tamei. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus started arguing with them and bringing proofs right and left, and all the rabbis didn't agree with him. And he said, but I'm right. They said, we don't buy it, you're wrong, we'll come to a vote. He said, before you go to a vote, if I'm right, then the stream that's flowing next to our academy will start flowing in the other direction. The stream started flowing in the other direction. So the rabbi said, we don't bring proof from streams. He said, if I'm right, the tree that's growing right here will hop 100 amma back. The tree took a hop 100 amma back. The rabbi said, we don't prove from trees. He said, if I'm right, the walls of the academy will start caving in on us. The walls started caving in. So one of the rabbis stood on his feet and said, we're having a discussion here. What are you guys getting involved? So the walls stayed put. That academy's walls were bent for the rest of time. They didn't straighten up because Rabbi Elazar was right. They didn't come crashing down because the rabbi started yelling at them. Think back to our letter of the Rambam's son that we learned earlier today, whether we're supposed to take this story literally. A heavenly voice came out and said, why are you arguing with my son Eliezer? He's right. So the rabbi stood on his feet and said, God, you told us to rule according to the laws you taught us. Based on our understanding is wrong. And we have to work with our understanding. We can't rule based on a heavenly voice. And with that, the rabbis came to a conclusion. They're ostracizing Rav Lez ben Hyrcanus. They banished him from the court. They banished him from the rabbinic sessions. They sent him home until he is willing to repent. They said, you can't argue with all the rabbis that much. You think you're right, everyone else thinks you're wrong. You can't fight that way. Rav Lez ben Hyrcanus went home. And every time he would daven, at the end of his Shmon Esrei, his wife would come in and disrupt him. Because right after Shmon Esrei, we'd say, Tachanun. We fall down and say, Hashem Rabu Tzarai. Rabon Shom, I'm suffering so much. Right? The Tachanun is a real expression of a person's pain. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus' wife, well, her husband was the rabbi who, her brother was the rabbi who ostracized Rabbi Elazar. Her brother was the prince, the chief rabbi, Rabban Gamliel. So Rabbi Elazar's wife was scared that if after Shmon Esrei he does Tachanun, her brother's going to die. So every time he'd finish Shmon Esrei, she'd come and say, honey, I have a question. Honey, can you come take that down for me? Every time she'd find a reason to disrupt him after Shmon Esrei, so he shouldn't go straight into Tachanun. One time, he was davening at home privately, because the rabbis wouldn't allow him into shul, and a poor man was at the door talking to her. So she didn't catch him, and he went straight from Shmon Esrei into Tachanun. And suddenly he's saying his Tachanun, weeping, saying, Rabon Shom, so many people have come up against me. And she's at the door and suddenly she realizes, oh no, I didn't disrupt him today. She runs into the room and says, you want to kill my brother? And before she finishes the sentence, they hear the trumpet blowing, which was a sign that the prince had died. Rabbi Gamliel had a sudden abrupt death at that moment. And he looked at her and said, how'd you know that would happen? What do you mean? So she said to him, I have a tradition from my great-great-great-grandfather, David HaMelech, that if someone afflicts someone else, then those gates don't get locked. It could be a person's prayers won't be answered for other reasons, but when a person is in pain because someone else hurt them and they raise their prayer to heaven, Hashem listens. And I knew that you've been pained by my brother, and if you would only say your Tachanun once with the Kavanah that you have, my brother would die. And look, I was right. Today I didn't disrupt you, and obviously my brother just passed away. So that's one of the stories the Gemara brings about how powerful is this commandment, don't afflict your fellow man. Even though the rabbis were right. Yeah, but they still hurt Rabbi Eliezer. And you see that in heaven when someone's hurt, then that pain carries a tremendous weight. We move on. We're up to Chamishi. The Torah tells us there's a special halacha of Batei Arei Choma. Houses that are in the walled cities. That houses in a walled city, you have 1 year to redeem them. And after that, the sale is final, and it does not go back on Yovel. Even though ordinarily on Yovel, all the properties go back to their original owners when we entered Israel, not so for the walled cities. The Levites, even if they're in walled cities, they could always redeem their cities. Let's move forward. Torah says, don't take a bite. What's a bite? Torah says, don't take a bite. What's a bite? A bite is interest. When people sign up for loans with interest, they don't realize what they're getting themselves into. There's a loan market called the gray market. You guys familiar with the gray market? The gray market is like this. There are a bunch of loan sharks that will lend you as much money as you want. You need a $100,000 loan, they'll give it to you, no problem. But they ensure they know where you live and your wife and your children. And they take an interest, and you could, and they create the interest in a way that you will only pay off the interest. So let's say they gave you 100,000 shekel loan, okay? 100,000 shekel. Your interest on that 100,000 is 3,000 shekel a month. So what they end up doing is they say, if you have the 100 grand by the time we agreed, you could pay it off. But so long as you don't have it, you're going to pay those 3,000 shekel interest per month. So what ends up happening is there are people who spend their whole life working and they never pay off the principal. All they're doing is paying interest. And like one taxi driver told me, said, I spend my whole life working for these loan sharks. One thing you should never do your whole life, even if you have to go to prison, why do people do this? Because they have outstanding loans. A person has to pay alimony. A person has debts that he says, if I don't pay them, I'll go to prison. But by taking a loan from the gray market, he ends up being in prison. What does the gray market do? If the guy, 1 month, he doesn't pay. So they come and they just cut off a quarter of his finger. They don't cut it. They tell him next month it'll be the whole finger. The following month it might be the whole hand. You're dealing with gangsters. The gray market, these loan sharks there, they know what they're doing. A person has to know that's something that you don't do. Better go to prison than take a loan from a loan shark. People sign off their life, they end up spending their life paying off the loan sharks. And they never pay it off. I mean, they're spending their whole life paying a tremendous interest their whole life. Torah says, don't take a bite. The Torah refers to interest as a bite. It's like the bite of a snake. The bite of a snake only hurts a little in the beginning. But the venom goes through the blood until it reaches the heart and kills the person. So the Torah purposely calls interest like a bite of a snake. Neshech, from the word neshicha, to bite. Because the Torah is telling you initially you'll think it's not a big deal. And you won't realize that it's a huge deal over time. So we have a biblical prohibition, a mitzvah d'oraisa, not to pay interest and not to collect interest from a fellow Jew. Torah gives us another mitzvah. You see your brother, and he's heading to financial disaster. His business is about to collapse. What's the major cause of business failure? You guys know? What's the number one cause of business failure? Cash flow.
Right.
Meaning businesses can succeed. They can be booming. The question is, do they have enough cash? Do people pay you on time? Feldheim Books was a wonderful business. And then he had a few customers who didn't pay him. And suddenly he couldn't pay his suppliers. And suddenly he had to start scrambling for money. Torah tells us, and he had to sell his business. He sold to Yoni Pozen, right? Today, there is no Feldheim Books, doesn't exist really. It was bought out by Yoni Pozen. The Torah tells us, you see your brother, he's about to hit collapse. Catch him quick before he hits collapse. Sometimes that one loan can hold the person over. One of the big... Donald Trump! I had the unfortunate experience of a relative who I couldn't say no to giving me his biography many years ago. So it's a very filthy biography. I recommend no one read it. I recommend you do not read that book. If I didn't feel like I couldn't like get rid of it without telling the person I read some of it, I wouldn't have opened the book. But
the news exposed him a bit.
What?
The news exposed him a bit. Won't be shocked.
I don't know. Very, very, very vulgar, arrogant. At any rate, so he writes over there that he was on the verge of financial ruin. His business was so bad at one point that the Japanese bankers of Citibank called him one night in the middle of the night. And real estate was doing bad in New York. And they called him down for a meeting. And it was 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And he had to go to this meeting. And he didn't have a coat. So he walks out of Trump Towers, and a beggar's on the floor there asking him for money. And he looks at the beggar and he thinks to himself, he writes in the book, he thought to himself, he is more wealthy than I, because I am in debt millions of dollars, and he's at zero. I'm not at zero. I'm at minus millions. And in the middle of the night, he had to go to that meeting, and he writes there that because these Japanese bankers were understanding, and they were willing to give him time with his real estate, to give him extensions on his loans, that's why he didn't hit financial ruin. The Torah tells us, you see your brother hitting financial collapse. You see he's hitting a downturn. He extends his hand with you. Grab that hand. Help him stand up. He has to live with you. And very often it's much easier to keep a business afloat than to help the person after everything collapses. And after everything collapses, then we say, oh, poor guy, how's he going to pay his electric bill? And how's he going to educate his kids? And how's he going to marry off his kids? And how's he going to put food on the table? He had a business. Help him save the business. That's the Torah's mitzvah. Mechazaktabo, grab him. And when you give him a loan, don't take interest. So we have biblical prohibition against giving a loan with interest, receiving a loan with interest. So how are businesses supposed to run? We need loans in today's financial market. So we have a concept called Heter Iska. You guys familiar with this? Heter Iska is quoted in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. This is something we've been doing for centuries. The idea is basically that we sell a partnership. Meaning you can't pay a person interest, but you can pay him a dividend. You are allowed to pay a percentage of the profits. It's complicated because every loan you take out of a bank has a Heter Iska in Israel, legally. Israel, the banks are owned by Jews, so by the Jewish government or whatever, so there's a Heter Iska there. It's more complicated than I'm making it. I'm oversimplifying it, but in a nutshell, that's the idea. That they're buying a partnership, they're buying a percentage, and that's what entitles them to the money, which would otherwise be called interest. Torah says, if you bought a Jewish servant, don't treat him like a slave. Treat him like a hired labor. And then let him go at the end of his time. Don't give him avodas parech. What's avodas parech?
That's hard work.
When you make someone work something that's pointless. Either you tell them, dig this pit, and when they're done you say, now refill it. That's one form of avodas parech that's prohibited. The second form is when you give him limitless labor. You tell him, just keep digging. You don't tell him when it's going to end. You don't explain to him a goal. So he has no goal in sight. Just work. So that's backbreaking labor. So those two are prohibited. What happens when a Jew sells himself to non-Jews? Right? So the Torah says, right away, make sure to buy him back. You, the relative, make sure to buy him back because he's going to lose all of his Torah. Once he's in that environment, how can he keep Shabbos? How can he keep kosher? There are opinions in the Talmud about when you buy him back, is he your servant? Because you understand, you could have a character in your family that's a gambler or he drinks or whatever, so he's always going to do this. Every time he needs more money, he'll go and sell himself, he'll take the money, he'll gamble, he'll drink, and then he'll end up being a slave. You got to bail me out, right? So one opinion in the Talmud says, no, when you bail him out, you leave him as a servant in your own home. Don't tell him, Cousin Jack, you could go home now, because he's got a problem, and then you'll have to bail him out again. And at the end of the parasha, we have a mitzvah not to bow on a mosaic floor. They used to create mosaic floors as part of idol worship, so you're not allowed to bow on that type of floor. That's the end of Parashat Behar. Now we move on to Bechukot.